This talk was given by Bear Gokhan Bonabacher at Zen Mountain Monastery. Gokhan is a senior monastic in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
A single excellent night. Let not a person revive the past or on the future build their hopes. For the past has been left behind, and the future has not been reached. Instead, with insight, let them see each presently arisen state. Let them know that and be sure of it, invincibly, unshakably. Today the effort must be made. Tomorrow death may come. Who knows? No bargain with mortality can keep him and his hordes away. But one who dwells thus ardently, relentlessly, by day, by night, it is they, the peaceful sage has said, who has had a single excellent night. So 3 or 4 weeks ago, I gave a talk on this stanza and ended up in that talk focusing on the past and our relationship with the past. I found that there was quite a bit to say about that and that it was helpful for me to look at that, at how the past affects the present, affects our life, the way that the past meets us here in the present, is constantly meeting us here. The importance of letting go of the past, of knowing, of seeing that we can let go, let things go. And that the past is alive with us here. We have to navigate the past here in the present, here in our life. Change the course of the past here in the present. And so I had left the future for the future, and the future has arrived. This stanza is from one of the sutras, so one of the Buddha's original teachings. But it seems that the stanza itself is not the Buddha's words, but seems to be a sort of a teaching that was existent in his time and that was used as a guide for students, was used as a kind of pithy teaching that teachers could use to explain practice. And so the sutra, this actually appears in several sutras, sort of one after another. And this one, one of the Buddha's disciples, Mahakakana, is explaining this stanza to some other students. It said in the sutra that this stanza belongs to the fundamentals of the spiritual life. It's good advice. It's good guidance that this stanza offers. Good advice for sesshin practice. Simple, direct. Don't get lost in thoughts of the future, fantasies about how things might be, worries about how things might turn out. The future doesn't exist yet. No need to dwell there. Don't dwell in thoughts about the past, whether they be of regret or the glories of the past. The past doesn't exist anymore, it's gone. See your present experience clearly. Experience your present experience directly. Each presently arisen state, the stanza says. Know that and be sure of it. See it clearly. And remember that life is fleeting. We don't know what tomorrow will bring. And so practice now. Practice now when you can practice, when you know you can practice. And so in these days of sesshin, how much time have you spent reviving the past? The stanza says the past has been left behind, but has it been left behind? How much energy goes into keeping it alive? And how much hope have you built on the future during these hours of sesshin? On things being a certain way sometime in the future? whether that be the next period of zazen, the next day, some time off in the sort of hazy future. And so, what is the past if it's gone? And what is the future? It would seem that it truly doesn't exist, right? It's not even a memory. Right? With the past, at least there's something we're holding or carrying, we can remember. It's just a fantasy, it's just our imagination. Part of the allure of the future is that we can, in our mind, do whatever we want with it. Shape it exactly to our liking. So the stanza says not to build our hopes on the future. It doesn't exist yet. So what are we building on if it doesn't exist? What is it that we're building? Mahakakana says, how does one build up hope upon the future? One sets one's heart on obtaining what has not yet been obtained, thinking, may my eyes be thus in the future and forms be thus. Because one sets one's heart thus, one delights in that. When one delights in that, one builds up hope upon the future. And then he goes on to work through the other senses. So may my eyes be thus and forms be thus. May my ears be thus and sound be thus. Working through each of our senses. May I get what I desire. May I experience what I desire, what I don't have now. So he says, we set our heart on obtaining what has not yet been obtained. And so where do these desires come from that we set our heart upon, that we create? How do we know what to set our heart upon? How do we decide that? Where does that come from? All the myriad possibilities, permutations. Was it based on our past experience? Things that we've found pleasurable that we want more of? Is this something we've been taught? This is what we should want, what will be satisfying, what will give us the answer? How is it that our hopes and desires are conditioned? How do we condition them? As we form and mull over and perfect our fantasies, our perfect future, how are we conditioning those hopes? Mahakakana says, because one sets one's heart thus, one delights in that. Because one sets one's heart thus, one delights in that. So the delight comes from setting our heart on something in the future. It doesn't come from that desire coming true. It's not dependent on it coming true. We delight in the desire, in the imagination, in the mental fabrication. It's worth studying this. I was remembering when I started to realize during Sesshin, I suppose I realized this very soon after I started doing Sesshin, but started to see how period after period I would be lost in, often in the future, in planning for the future and creating, building something, designing something, designing my future. And so period after period, so compelling. So compelling. And then the period would come to an end, and the bell would ring, and I would come back into the room. And seeing that over and over again, I started to ask myself, well, I started to see that there was never anything there when the bell rang. It was just sitting here in my cushion again. And so I started to ask myself, what do I want? It's very compelling. It can be very pleasurable. That's why I go back to it over and over again. But what do I want? Is what I'm creating in my mind ever satisfying? Is it ever going to be satisfying? Where do I want to live? Right? I'm living there in that fantasy, in that future imagined. And where do I want to live? Because it's not just when I'm doing zazen, right? It's most visible when we're doing zazen. But it's all the time, can be all the time. And you know what? That's one of the values of Sesshin. It's just the period after period after period. So you get to see what you do period after period after period. See it clearly. Sesshin after Sesshin. And so asking myself, is that where I want to be? And I was practicing letting go. So I was also seeing, well, I had a choice. I could let go. I could give those fantasies less energy. I could actually try to let them go rather than going into them. I started to see that it was a choice. We have a choice. You know, we sort of fall into these desires, these fantasies, because they tap into something visceral, something human, something that's in us, something that's real, in a sense. And so the five desires, as they're explained in Buddhism, are food, sex, sleep, status, and comfort. And I first heard these in Sesshin, and I was like, whoa, that covers it. And then I started to kind of keep a tally, right? Some statistics. And, you know, I think I Googled this because I wanted to make sure that I had the wording right. And what came up was a Korean koan using these five desires that says, so these are the five desires, which is most important to you? So it's a way to see something about yourself. Where is it that you spend your time? Where is it that you go? Right? What is it that you're sort of wanting? And in looking at that, to study attachment. Right? What is it? Why do you go there? What is that for you? And, you know, each of these things in themselves are not, there's nothing wrong with them, right? We need to eat, right? We need all of these things. And so what is the attachment? Where is the problem? Where is the stuckness? To see what happens when we fuel these fantasies, and to see what happens when we let go, when we let things come and go, when we see that we don't have to get stuck. Shugen Roshi, a couple weeks ago, talked about Mara, and talked about Mara coming to the Buddha and coming to other very senior practitioners, coming to the Buddha up until the end of his life. Mara is the tempter. Mara is our mind. Just pointing out that we can let things go. There are things that, you know, so those things that I used to get caught in period after period after period, some of them will come up now, and there's just a blip. They'll come up, and I let them pass. And last week, right after Shugen gave this talk about Mara, I was doing a hermitage, and I had to speak to Mara very directly. Some of these old things came to visit, right, and still had power. It was helpful to be able to speak to that, but I had to speak to him. It's interesting that in his commentary, Mahakakana, in talking about building hopes for the future, he's talking about hope. He's just talking about the things that we desire, the pleasurable things that we look for in the future, that we dream about in the future? What about all of the things that we worry about? All the energy that goes into that, the anxiety. There were a few times recently when Sean and I were talking talking about something, I had to have a conversation with someone and I was worried about it and I was worried about how it was going to go. And, in the conversation, she could see what was happening in my mind. She could see that I was starting to worry about it. And she would said a few times to me, right now it's just mental fabrication. It's like she could see from the outside what was happening in my mind. That I was building it up already, that I was getting tense in my body. I mentioned that in my last talk. It was helpful. Right? It was like I was ready to hear that. Be like, oh, yeah. Yeah, it's not here yet. That's just mental fabrication. In those last 2 minutes, I created that worry out of nowhere, out of nothing. I'm getting all worked up about a mental fabrication. And so we should look at that too, about the future that we worry about, the anxiety that we carry about the future. How do we work with that? See how that particularly thing can be in our body. It cannot be, we can't always see it, I find in myself. I can't always see it in my thought. But they'll be like, oh, something's going on in my body. I think maybe that's what's going on. I've been wondering whether this cough is going to clear up when I'm done with this talk. So, building up a future that does not exist, a life, we can build up a life that does not exist. We can live imagining how things will be like when they're different somehow, when they're better somehow, when we've changed somehow, when things have changed somehow. I'll be able to practice when I take care of these other things, when the conditions get better, when I have more time. We do this in the short term. We do this during Sesshin. Right? I'm tired this period, but I think after dinner I'll feel better and then I can practice. And so just to notice that and how we do them in bigger ways, do that in bigger ways. And to see what do these thoughts about the future do to the present, do to our present experience, these mental fabrications. Some months ago, I had an experience where I for some months, was feeding a sort of fantasy vision of the future, of my future, how things would be different, how our monastic life, but really my monastic life, would be a little different, a little quieter, a little more time to study, a little more space. And I fed this and fed this and fed this. I was thinking it was sort of like I was walking around stuffing things into a big bag, carrying the bag around. And, of course, the sort of the underlying fantasy was, then I would be leading an enlightened life when things were just a little bit different. And then it kind of got exploded. And that was painful. I felt like my life was coming apart. This life that I had created in my mind. It was like the bag had burst all of a sudden. Everything that I was carrying fell out. And in my upset, I went into Doksan, Shugan Roshi, and tried to explain what had been happening, and he was basically like, yeah, that would be nice. Don't make it an attachment. Just don't make it an attachment. And that helps me to understand what I had been doing, how attached I had been to this fantasy I created, how much energy I'd put into that, had been putting into that. And then as things settled a little bit and this sort of pain moved through me, it was liberating. I landed back here in my life, my wonderful life, and it was wonderful again. And I realized how much this had been affecting my life, this big bag of stuff that I'd been carrying around, this fantasy that I'd been creating. It had been affecting my current experience. My fantasy had been making me suffer. And a couple weeks later, I went back into Doksan, and I had sort of been reflecting on things and wanted to share that. And I started talking and explaining, and she was like, "What are you talking about?" And I was just like, this huge, like what had felt like this really big kind of event in my life. I was like, "What are you talking about?" It had all been in my mind. And so what is our relationship with the future? The future in our mind. How does this affect the present, what we create in our mind? And so this teaching, this stanza, encouraging us to, in our zazen practice, in our sesshin practice, so that let this speak to you right now, to not dwell in the future and build up the future and create a fantasy future. To not dwell in the past, but to allow yourself to arrive right here, just right here in your body, mind, experience now. And to look at what is right here? What is it when there's not even a wisp of desire? A wisp of hope, a wisp of worry. What is that? And in a similar way that I kind of arrived when looking at the past, we can't deny the past. We can't deny the future. There is a future. There's a way in which practice is predicated on the future. Right? There's a fundamental teaching of Buddhism that what we do now affects the future. What we do now creates who we are. We will be. The future is constantly arriving, meeting us here. We know this, right? We know this too. This is true. Since that's why we practice, right? We know that it changes things, the way we use our mind now. We know from our past experience, coming together with our understanding of the future, meeting here. So tomorrow night we'll be invited to make a vow for the future, for the new year, for our life in the new year. A vow can change the future, can change our life right here, where the future is arriving constantly. Unfolding. And so what is our relationship with the future? With our own life in the future? How do we want our life to be? Dogen's line came to mind, how do we use the 24 hours of the day instead of being used by them? How do we use the past rather than being used by the past? How we use the future rather than being used by the future. How we use our mind rather than being used by our mind. And so this stanza, this teaching ends with a practitioner having a single excellent night or a day and a night, an excellent period of practice. Nobody gets enlightened. Nobody becomes an arhat or a stream enterer or a once returner, so often happens in the sutras. Simply an excellent period of working with our mind. This excellent night leaves them, is them dwelling ardently, relentlessly. What is it to dwell ardently, relentlessly, without reviving the past or building hope on the future? You know, we seem to so constantly want things to be different than they are, other than this, other than right now. Why is it that we're so convinced that what we want is other than right now? That it's somewhere else. Because we miss the right now when we do that. And I think there's some disappointment in realizing that this is it. There isn't that other. There's a way in which practice holds out a promise that things can be perfect, things will be different, things can be different, but it's not going somewhere else. It's not being someone else. Practice can change everything. How to explain the transformation that is just in our way of being, in our being. And after years and years of practice, I'm still me. Right? You're still you. I'm still crazy. And so I was just thinking about how, feeling into how transformative practice is. And we don't get anything. We don't get anything. And what we're doing isn't special. It doesn't make us special. It's just a path back to ourselves, back to the heart of ourselves, of our life. We do get our life, get ourselves. And I feel like as I've been sort of accepting and trusting that, I've been appreciating appreciating the kind of the mystery of that, of this. So we are in this excellent night. We have a couple of them left. Let's really use this precious time that we have and trust the form of Sesshin, trust just turning back into Sesshin over and over again, kind of no matter what's happening. Right? We don't know how things are going to unfold. We can't know. We can't control that. But trust this ancient form, this ancient path that's been preserved for us, maintained for us, that we maintain. And just keep turning back into that. Trust that. And trust in that, just turning, really what you do is just, you're turning it back into yourself. Trust that.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as meditation cushions, incense, malas, liturgical instruments, books, and more, visit the monastery store at monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.